I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
And welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. Your vote, your voice. That's what we're talking about as we are on the eve of the national midterm election that's going to be kicking off in just a few hours, folks. Polls will be opening up for you to cast your ballot from everything from senator to delegate to governor. I mean, it's going to be a major, major situation. And we can't emphasize enough that you want to stay in tune with WEAA all day long as we have our your voice 2018 election coverage that will be happening from morning to night. And we'll keep you up to date about what's happening at the polls, what's going on with the candidates, what's happening with the races, and most importantly, having the conversations about where we are in our political landscape here in this country. And I wanted to continue the conversation tonight because we are talking about so many different elements of this political climate that we are in. And one of the big things is that we're finding that democracy may be the one thing that's at risk. Dwayne said it to kick us off tonight. Democracy is on the ballot. President Obama said the character of our country is on the ballot. Let me tell you what else is on the ballot. There are some real issues that are at stake here, folks, that we cannot be, not recognized. The fact is that it's not just about Senate seats or House seats. It's not just about the fact that we might have some governors, some black governors, first-time black governors in a few states. Is not that at all. Our sanity, political sanity, is on the ballot. Our sense of finding balance is on the ballot. Truth, that's a big one, is on the ballot. Faith in democracy on the ballot. So these are the big things that we oftentimes just don't speak about enough of. Because you're always wondering, why don't people come out to vote? Why don't people come out to vote? Why? Because these things, very, very fundamental, important things, they're intangible things because you can't measure faith, quote unquote. You can't measure balance and sanity. But these things are the things that are on the ballot. These are the things that people see. And as much as you might be apolitical, you might be non-political, you might say, I'm not a Democrat or Republican and all of those things. You're watching, you're looking at a climate that is constantly changing and in some cases has gotten worse over the years. And you're saying to yourself, well, why should I even invest? Why should I even invest in this? In this madness, what you may call foolishness, and it's understandable. It is understandable, and I don't think that let's have a real conversation about this. The investment is, we're trying to do our part as citizens, right? However you take that, folks, it's up to you. But more importantly, it's that we need to get into the role of becoming politically active. Okay, fine. You don't become politically active in this case, right? What makes you think that you become politically active if something that does speak to your interest comes up? See, this is not just an exercise, but it does get us into the thinking of understanding how the system works, understanding how laws and policies are developed, understanding how things interconnect with one another. And I said it for the first hour, and I'm going to reiterate it for the second hour. If you're not at the table, then you will be on the menu. We got to be at the table. But guess what? Before you can even be at the table, you got to know that dinner is being served, baby. You at the table and nobody even set the plates. Put out the forks. You at the table, and guess what? No one else is there with you because dinner is not being served. So your timing, your understanding, your view of the world is not consistent with what's happening in reality. Whew, I think I may have lost some listeners. All right, let's go back to the lines. We got folks that are checking in. Let's go to Fred out of Northwest Baltimore. Fred, talk to me.
Roger, how are you?
I'm good, Fred. How are you, brother?
It's just a pleasure to hear some of this dialogue come out of your mouth, man.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, Roger, what is your political persuasion?
Well, you know what? I like to say that I vote for what's in my best interest and what's for truthful, right?
Right.
So you know, I'm not. It's not about Democrat or Republican for me. So it's really not about either one of them for me. It's like what is in our best interest.
And you know, that's why I have a lot of respect for you, Roger.
Yeah.
Because we got some people, man. They went to Annapolis. Man looked them in the face and told them, "You're too black to be down here."
Mm.
And they still Democrats. But that which don't make sense at all, you know. Man, tell you, poor black, you're too black to be down in Annapolis. And then you go uptown, man, so what's your registration? I'm a Democrat. See, we didn't really get our rights to vote until 1965.
Mm.
We don't realize that slavery wasn't really over in this country officially until 65.
Mm.
For the Rights Act, for every black in the country.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, really. So, I mean, to think that we're here in the game, you want to make an impression on the game? 40 million black people in America, if 20 million of them had all their money, or a large percentage of their money, in a black bank, that gives us strength.
That's huge.
You know what I'm saying?
That's
There's only
big.
6 million Jews in America, and they got all their money in the same bank. That's why they're so powerful. We talk the game that, you know, we want to straighten this thing out, turn the ship around, but do we really want to turn it around? I mean, Gaddafi was trying to turn the 54 countries in Africa to pool their resources.
Right.
He ain't
here
no more.
You're right.
Huh?
You're right.
They knew what was coming if he figured it out, but now.
Yeah.
They got our man who said this is the greatest crisis of all time, the character of America. Who's that? Obama said that?
Yeah, the character of our country is on the ballot.
I heard you laughing when you said that. I wonder if the character of the country's on the ballot when he was running around with the LGBT flag on.
Well, you know what? And here's but you know what, Fred? You got, being any type of political leader,
yeah.
You got to, you have to accommodate the needs of a diverse population.
Oh, well, you do.
So I'm not mad. I'm not mad at him for fighting for the rights of the LGBTQ community.
For Roger.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have friends, relatives.
Absolutely. That's my point.
Okay.
That's my point.
The black community, though, did not want to question six, Proposition 8, said that this thing is a marriage, the same as the marriages in the Bible.
Right.
The black community said no across the country. But yet our so-called leaders, our Rhodes Scholar, and our first supposedly black president said they don't know what they're talking about. It's not what I think, Taraji. It's divine intervention that every precinct in the black community in the state of Maryland, it's a fact,
yeah,
voted against it. They voted for civil.
But you can't, as much as you might, but here's the thing, as much as you talk about voting against that particular issue, you can't vote against the way people live their lives.
No, we don't vote against the lifestyle.
You know what I'm saying? And like, what do you expect a president to do when you have many people from the LGBTQ community who wield some level of political power?
Well, I mean, again, not for all.
They give. You know what I'm saying? They give. They organize. They wield some level of power and influence. And they have a lobby. They have a mechanism by which they work to get their interests across. Now, that's not for all of the LGBTQ community, because you know, Fred, even within that community, there are separation. You know, and we've
the black LGBT community in Baltimore, Maryland,
yeah.
Mount Vernon is the area they live in, was for civil unions.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because they want to try to stay on that spiritual side of what's going on.
I got you. Okay? I got you. Now,
once you
yes,
dump
sir.
All that, if you dump all everything, you're not sure. No one said that these people shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't have the rights to live with somebody, get the benefits from the state. They should. Civil unions. That was the black community's position.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
How can our leadership be so out of touch with us? That they would stand on the pulpit and say, I represent the black community. They thought that way.
But he never said that.
Well, I heard somebody say that something was wrong with the administration.
President Obama never came out and said that he represents the black community. We knew that he was black, obviously. And we hoped that he represented the black community. But look, let's keep it real, right? On the other side of that issue, it was under his administration. For the 8 years that he was in, we saw the rise in police shootings and killings of black men.
Right. And what did you hear him say about that?
I think there was more done on the back end, to be honest, Fred. And I got to let you go.
Go right ahead, buddy.
Hey, and I appreciate you.
Always
you know I do.
Pleasure.
You know what I do. Absolutely. But I think there was a lot more done on the back end of that. I mean, he certainly said his remarks about Trayvon Martin, and he certainly acknowledged that that's a problem. He acknowledged it. But I think that with his Attorney General, Mr. Eric Holder, and others trying to do some things on the back end, Eric Holder went to Ferguson. They tried to do some things on the back end. And that was the political side of it. Now, was it something that we necessarily wanted to see? No. Some of us wanted to see more aggressive, bully pulpit-style policymaking from the president when it came to this particular thing. But when you're talking about uprooting an institution like the police department in any city, then that takes some time. That's going to take some digging, and that's going to take some work. Leo Barrows, Bolton Hill, talk to me. What's your take? Leo?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Leo.
Okay. I said good evening. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great. Great show as always.
Thank you.
You know, I'm thinking what resonated with me was when you mentioned how we place politicians, many of us, on a pedestal that they don't deserve necessarily. In other words, they are public servants.
Right.
And I think that has something to do with the citations that they give out. We get citations from the governor, the mayor, the city council representative, and it has the seal of approval, a stamp from the city, state, or federal government conferring a distinguished activity on the part of the recipient. I think we get carried away with that. And also, there's signs they put up. They rename roads after churches, and they rename streets after famous people, many of whom are not dead. They're very much alive. And we stick our chest out, and we think that that gives them some right of benevolence or that they can confer the wisdom of God upon us. So, again, I'm struck by what you said and reacting to it in that way. I attended the Million Man March. I've attended most of them for the last 40, 50 years, 1995. Am I correct? October 16th.
Right.
Minister Louis Farrakhan provided by his leadership and coordination a pathway to truth for African people. And I was also struck by the fact that when he was at the funeral of Aretha Franklin, he sat on center stage, and I was told, I wasn't there, but I was told that the powers that be didn't want him to speak. And quite frankly, I could not understand that, given the fact that we are one people. We have different religions and denominations and faiths as children of the one and only living God, but he should not have been the victim of discrimination in that regard. So let me close on this note. An example of politicians run amok has recently occurred as today, when you had the Civilian Review Board suing the Baltimore City Police Department because 11 subpoenas for information relative to the cases before them was ignored by the police department, apparently with the support of the mayor and the city solicitor, Andre Davis. Outrageous.
Gotcha.
And all I can say is, let's take them down a peg. You work for the people. This is a democracy. Let's arrest those people and cite those people who are obstructing justice for doing so. If you have to take them to court on obstruction of justice and arrest the mayor or whomever else is involved, then so be it. But we've got to let the politicians know that they are our equals. They are on a footing with the people they represent.
Absolutely.
But they are not above the law.
Absolutely. Leo Barrows checking in from Bolton Hill. Always good to hear from you, Leo. Let's go to Tina out of Baltimore. Tina, what's your take on this? Is democracy at risk?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, Tina. We can.
Yes. I wanted to circle back to what you said about, you had mentioned something about people, we don't have the luxury right now of I think you were referring to Islam or Minister Farrakhan, but when you look at the leader and not and disregard the what they're saying, you mentioned something about that. And so I wanted to say, why don't we as urbanites, as black people, use that same reasoning when looking at the Democratic Party and the Republican Party? And so, you know, with being a Baltimorean, you know, I live in the city. You know, I've been a Democrat for years.
Yep.
I've voted Democrat for years. I've always voted. And I haven't seen anything change. The crime level is up. It's getting worse. You know, jobs aren't getting worse. I haven't seen the situation of our people change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear people, you know, being, you know, going after the Republicans and Donald Trump. You know, I haven't heard anybody talk about, you know, the large amount of black people that were at the White House, this whole Blexit movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as being said about the Republican Party and Trump administration, I mean, there are some positive things that have come out of this administration. I mean, he has given more money to HBCUs than any previous administration, at least more than Obama did. And so I'm not saying that the Republican Party is the answer. But I certainly can, just from what we've been doing, voting Democrat, over 90% of us vote Democratic. And what changes are we seeing? So something's got to change. So why can't we give something else a change? So that's why, personally, I am not voting for any Democratic leaders in this election.
Mm.
I'm making a conscientious vote and voting for anybody else other than the Democrat. And I think if more of us do that, they'll have to earn our votes, just like they do for the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always pushing the immigrants' right, you know, but I don't see them riding for African Americans. What are they doing in our city? So, and I just want to question that. Why are we continuing to vote Democratic, and what have they done for us? What have they done for us locally? What have they done for us nationally? When you look at the Trump administration, and again, I think we fall victim to just reading headlines and these newspapers and not actually going into the actual articles and reading the real information. You know, the Trump administration, they're going after criminal justice reform, you know, with the HBCUs, appropriating more money to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the list goes on. I think, now, like I said, I'm not saying they are the key, but the Democrats are not the key unless you are LGBTQ. And just like your caller said a couple of minutes ago, what about the rest of it? You know,
right.
What about the people no offense to you, but if you're Christian, to me, it's like you're ostracized. They'll take Buddhists, Muslims even. But if you're Christian, then you kind of turn the blind eye. You're like the black plague. So I'm just saying, I think it's time for us to really take a look. And even into this Blexit movement, you know, I don't agree with everything that they're saying. But this is something that's really important for our community, I think. It's time for them to take a look at us.
And Tina,
and,
I think...
You know,
No, Tina, I hear you loud and clear, and I want to be clear. We could talk about certainly the program of the Nation of Islam, but there are many people, black leaders, that have come to our people with ideas, right? Leo mentioned the Million Man March. There was a national agenda that was put together at the time of the Million Man March that was revised 10 years later. That was revised 5 years later after the Million Man March, a national agenda, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about the NAACP, we're not just talking about Nation of Islam. When you talk about the NAACP, when you talk about the Urban League, right? These are institutions that and organizations that have put forth ideas on how to get our people on track economically, socially, politically, educationally, right? But mm-hmm. we constantly put out these ideas, these agendas, these reports, and all of those things, right? And I'm saying you don't even have to be a part of the Nation of Islam. You could just be a Christian. It doesn't matter what your background or religious is. But we're at this point where we just don't want to accept new ideas.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. Now, that's the point I'm making. Now, in regards to what you're saying to President Trump, according to the Department of Education, they said that President Trump gave the most to HBCUs for both undergraduate and graduate studies. President Obama held that record back in 2010, but in 2018, Trump appropriated more than $360 million. That's $32 million more than President Obama. So essentially, yes, the president has spent more than any other president on HBCUs. Here's the thing. We can praise him for that, and that's necessary. The thing, though, is that that's a small part of a larger program. So he gives to HBCUs, but then he tightens up the policy about, he might reinstate the three strikes, you're out policy. And that's the thing. It's like you do one thing good, and then the next thing you do may cancel out the good of the thing that you did before. And I'm not saying, and I agree with you, Tina. I think that we should get out of this mental space that we have to keep aligning ourselves with parties or with people that's not in our best interest. Also, I'm trying to get us to think. I'm not telling you to not vote. I think you should vote. I'm telling you to vote your interest. Whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent doesn't matter. I think you should just essentially vote for what you believe is in alignment with your values and your interests. Well, then otherwise, then what's the point of voting? What's the point of voting? If you're not at the table, folks, guess what? You're going to be on a menu. So we got it. The vote is, that's the way that this order and system of things see you at being at the table by voting. That's it, okay? So you vote. Now you can say, no, I voted. Like you, many of us will say, no, I pay my taxes. That's you being at the table. I work. I add to the gross domestic product of this country. That's you being at the table, right? I support schools, and I do all of these things. These are efforts of you being at the table. But now you got to know what's on the menu. You got to be a part of that, because voting is just not enough. It's not sufficient. Tina, I really appreciate you for bringing up that point, though. I really do. And I'm glad that you did, because I want us to have critical thought, not just follower thought. Critical thought, folks, to think about where we are, the system that we in, the role that we play, and not just going into this situation blindly. Tina, thank you so much for checking in. Gary, we got you next. Then I got GQ from DC, Paul, Ed, and Brother EZ. Thank you so much. Look, we got to take a final break. When we come back, more of your comments, more of your thoughts as we talk about democracy. Is it at risk with this upcoming election? Stay rotten with us. It's For the Culture here on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Culture. Welcome back to For the Culture. Right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. We're talking about it, folks. Your vote, your voice, 2018. That's right. We're going to do all our part to make sure that we give you the up-to-date developments in this year's national midterm election. Stay tuned to all of that tomorrow. It's going to be kicking off tomorrow. But tonight, having a conversation on Voters Eve, Election Eve, about the state of our democracy, and do you feel like it's at risk? A lot of great things. Tina brought up a very great point, man. I'm really thankful to Tina for that one. Let's go to Gary out of Baltimore. Gary, thank you for your extreme patience. What's your take on it, sir?
All right. Salaam alaikum, Brother Faraji. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you, Brother Gary?
I am doing excellent. This is the universe is something else, brother. You know, I do my radio show on Fridays, and this was the exact topic, which so it is right on time. I am actually been arguing with so many people over the, you know, up to this midterm election. And so I actually wanted to do a show on exactly these things. And you've had so many good guests with so many really good, just, you know, insight on this whole thing from Tina to Fred to the things that are going on right here in Baltimore. The gentleman was speaking about just so many good things. But where I really want, you know, to start off with the answer to the question is democracy is no more in jeopardy on this ballot as it has been on any other. So we have not felt that democracy was in jeopardy before. It is in no more jeopardy today than any other time in history.
Yeah.
As it pertains to, you know, President Trump, the chump, whatever you want to refer to him as. I get a little confused on how black people specifically seem to take on this stance that this is the worst president that we've ever had. From a historical standpoint, for African Americans, black people, whatever you want to call us, Afro Americans, this guy is no more an enemy of ours than those before him.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or any of those platforms that never have had policy with us as a part of the agenda as far as moving forward, as far as forward mobility, you know, anyway, it is mind-boggling that those of us who consider ourselves the talented tenth, the educated among us, would continue to drink the same Kool-Aid over and over again. Now, what I have actually put out there as an agenda is nothing new. Like you said, I'm, you know, being a former member of someone who is a part of the Nation of Islam and that teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and also being a student of Tuskegee University and really the understanding of Booker T. Washington and casting your bucket down. Neither of these men were men who taught to us to depend upon other people.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems as if we have given up all of our own self worth or self reliance, and now rely upon one simple vote to move us forward as a people, as a nation.
I would agree.
And from a historical standpoint, that was never the point that our ancestors made when they asked and fought and died for the right to vote. It was never a thing where they considered voting to be the end-all, be-all. We're talking during Jim Crow, when we had 40% black business owners, which today is 3%. We're talking 1965, when we had less than 103 black public elected officials. Today we have over 12,000, and we still have not made any greater standings when it comes to home ownership, still stagnant at 49%. When it comes to education, still board, you know, versus education has not actually moved us ahead from an educational standing. And we continue to say, well, it's because we're not participating enough in the process. And the point is that the process has failed us and continues to fail us, and those that we've elected have failed us and continue to fail us. And giving someone 2 and 4 and 6 years before we vote them out is not enough. When we look at our failing schools and they move principals every 4 years, that is a generation of children that they have messed over.
Hey, Gary, I got to stop you there just because of time, but I definitely understand. You're right. You're right. And I think that's the unfortunate part about this conversation, Gary. The unfortunate part of it is, we find ourselves as a conundrum, as a community of people who was trying to find, and I said this the other day, who's trying to find their political identity. Because our political identity is so weaved into the history and fabric of this country, right? That we've been unfortunately placed in a position where we're being compelled to be bipolar, that we have to respond to the reality, but yet we are being compelled to look forward to the future in a way that's not, either one of them doesn't seem certain, doesn't seem like there's going to be a win coming out for us. So that's where we find ourselves. Let's go to GQ out of Washington, D.C. GQ, thank you for your patience, sir. What's your take?
My take is democracy is not on the ballot.
It's not on the ballot.
What's on the ballot is black people's knowledge of how to vote, being informed. I'm a Republican by choice, but this time I'm voting Democratic because of what I like from a Democratic that's running, as well as what I've seen with the Republican Party. My views are mostly conservative.
Right.
And as you already stated, the majority of people in this country who are doing bad economically is white folks. But transfer that to all groups of people. The only people in this country that are doing good and will always do good is the educated and the determined. Mm. If you're the cool guy in the school but don't want to learn and you tease the nerds, see, the nerds know I'm going to get the girl after I get the education.
Mm-hmm.
Because the education is going to give me the opportunity. So all the guys and all the women that you see today that's doing bad, that you see on the corners in the African-American community, or you see in the trailer parks in the white community, those are the ones who didn't get the education when they was young. And when you get the education with determination, you do good in this country. The people who are educated and who are determined, and education doesn't necessarily mean going to a school. If you just got a gift and you know how to cultivate it and put it to good use that you can live off of, then you're going to do good because you're determined.
Right.
Right. See, I respect President Trump only for one reason. And you know what that is?
What's that?
He told us who he was, and he got elected. I respect the devil I know, than the devil I don't know. And President Obama was the president for all people. But black people, we have a tendency to hijack anybody that we think looks like us or talk like us. We hijacked Bill Clinton because he got on Arsenio Hall and played the horn.
Right.
He said he was the first black president. But Bill Clinton was
who signed we the said
crime
that.
Bill and created all that prisons for all the people to go to jail that was of color.
Yeah, yeah. He said that, though. You know what I mean, GQ? He said that. He didn't say that. We said that about him. We put him into that space of being the quote-unquote first black president until he signed that bill.
Because we will hijack anybody. Because the black people that had enough sense to get educated and be determined,
yeah,
they're doing good today.
But here's the thing, GQ. I think that the fact that you say and you use the term hijack, where does the hijacking come from? The hijacking comes from a place of wanting and hope. We have such a deep hope. We have such a deep hope, right? We want to believe. Let me tell you something, folks. Many people tend to believe that black people in this country are unpatriotic. I beg to differ. I think we are of the most patriotic folk that this country, that is in this country, just because we want to believe so bad. We want to hope that the person that is standing in front of us, regardless of the office that he or she representing, is in the best interest of our interest. We want to believe so bad because we have hope that, look, somebody is going to relieve us of the burden of being seen less than human in this country. And so if you speak to our people in a certain way, like you said, GQ, you connect or communicate with our people, you relate with our people, we will hijack you because the hope runs deep. And it may not be logical, and it may not be quote-unquote right, but the hope is real. It is absolutely real because we want to find somebody that's going to speak for us and somebody that's going to see us as human beings in this country. GQ, I got to let you go, but I appreciate you for checking in. You brought some thoughts to the conversation. Brother Ayize, talk to me. Northeast Baltimore.
Peace and blessings, Brother Faraji, and to the WEAA family. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Hey, I'm grateful, brother. I'm grateful. Hey, man, thank you for yet again another provocative and great discussion.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So I want to just make one point, and then I guess I can circle back to answer the question. You talked about things on the ballot, and I just wanted people to realize that, you know, not only voting for the governor is a major thing on the ballot, there's some other things that are really important, and particularly the one that I've been organizing around, working with Build Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development here in Baltimore, as well as Action in Montgomery and Montgomery County, is this question number one, which is the lockbox issue. And if people believe that we need to have our first-class educational system for our children here in Maryland, mm-hmm. then by voting for the lockbox money to go towards education, then we'd be putting a down payment of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars per year to go toward education for our children so that they might have opportunity and might realize some hope. But right now, you have these politicians that have, you know, when the casinos were going in, they say, oh, the money's going to go for education, but they haven't used it only for education, but they've been getting acting funny with the money. And so now, you know, we have this ballot initiative that's mandating that the money will go for education and it will not supplant but will be in addition to. And so that is a critical one that's on the ballot. And I would urge everyone who really cares for our children to have a first-class education to consider voting for question one on the ballot so that the lockbox money strictly goes towards education. And then if I could just, you know, answer the question you said, is democracy at risk? My question to your question is, did we ever have a democracy? I think brother said we might have more of a hypocrisy than a democracy, particularly as it relates to, you know, black people. You know,
valid point.
We talk about being in the land of the free where, you know, our people were held in chains for over 100 years. And so they talk of, you know, freedom, but we didn't taste that freedom. And so, again, we still see a lot of hypocrisy and not so much democracy. And so I think the question might need to be troubled.
Wow. Good question. Brother Ayize, thank you so much for checking in. Let's go to Paul. You're welcome. Paul out of West Baltimore. Paul, what's your take, sir?
Thanks for taking my call, Buffalo Rod.
You're welcome.
The last caller had a lot of value points, but my question to him is, the way that the track record runs in Baltimore, who's going to be in control of that money? I would have to start right there, because we know when it comes to Baltimore, there's a lot of mishandling and money that's supposed to go where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
That would be my question to him.
That's a good question.
The other thing is, am I to believe that Donald Trump, who has proven and shown that he's a racist, he's a bigot, he don't care about nobody but the wealthy people, believe that he's the answer from the callers that I've been hearing tonight? You got to be kidding me. Now, no, our democracy is not in jeopardy. Here's what's in jeopardy, Brother Friday, and I told you, I think, last week or the week before.
Yeah.
Sister Tina hit it on the nose. Black people are waking up. What hurt me the most is we had a lot of leaders, a lot of black leaders, right? But none of the black leaders, have I heard them out their mouth say, hey, Democratic Party, I'm giving you a warning now. If you guys don't start doing stuff for black people, the LGBTQs, whatever you want to call them, the illegal people that's getting all the breaks with the taxpayers' money, you know, and I have nothing against nobody. All I'm saying is, when is the African-American people going to get justice? When are we going to get prison reform? When are we going to get all the stuff that we need done for us? I think somebody, one of the leaders that's out there, okay, should go and make it known to the Democratic Party. We putting y'all on watch as of this election here. If you guys don't start doing what you're supposed to be doing, then guess what? You're not getting our vote.
But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, though, Paul.
Uh-huh.
There are a number of black leaders that have done that.
Name one.
I mean, if you want to go through them, you could say Minister Farrakhan. You could say the NAACP. If you could say the Urban League, you can say the national, the Pan-Africanist leaders, leadership. I mean, there have been so many black leaders, right, that have stood in front of, and they have made their purpose known that, look, we can't continue to vote. Now, here's the thing. The thing is, one, we have to be, as the constituents, as the citizenry, we have to be ready to make that decision. You can have a bunch of people that is going to say that. But then we have to make that decision, right? The question doesn't become on black leaders. The question is, okay, if you're not satisfied with any particular party, are you ready to make a Blexit?
Well, I got news for you, Buffalo Rod.
Yeah.
Remember, this is the second time I'm telling you this.
Yeah, I got you.
It's going to be a shift, man. I'm telling you, the black people are waking up, young and old, and we have had enough with supporting a party that does nothing for us. We are waking up. I'm going to tell you, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
This is my last ride with the Democrats, okay? This is my last ride with y'all. After this, I'm doing some totally different things, not just me. I got other people who are saying the same thing I'm tired of looking at illegals get driver's license, get the job, they don't pay taxes, all other stuff. We don't have no job, and I'm not going to say because we don't want to work, because when you go down by the harbor, you see even Latino women sweeping up trash,
you're right,
getting paid money.
Yep.
You know, so enough is enough, but I'm going to tell you, black people, if you look around with Brother Fauci, black people are getting tired of Democrats. You heard Uncle Fred, you heard the rest of the people. We are getting tired of them. I'm telling you, it's coming. It's coming, and they're going to be very upset if they don't take over this house. But I know there's a lot of black people that's not going to vote for the Democrats.
Hey, Paul.
Here's
my prediction. You always throw predictions at me, Paul. Here's my prediction.
Okay, go ahead.
If we don't see that change in tomorrow's election, guess when I think we're going to see it? 2020.
I think so, too.
I think, I'm going to say locally. Locally, if we don't see the change that we all have been yearning for, locally, some of those things are going to change. The Democratic stronghold that we have in this city and around this state is going to be broken up real serious.
It's coming. And guess what?
We saw that with Governor Hogan. We saw that.
And guess what? When that happens, you're going to start seeing black people do so good because they'll be able to now have to stand up on their feet. And they gonna love everything.
Hey, look, here's the thing. Here's the thing, folks, that and Paul, I know you agree with me. At this point in time, if you are a black person running for political leadership, you got to be able to withstand the fire of black people who are going to scrutinize you, who are going to question you, who are going to challenge you.
Right.
You got to be able to withstand that fire. Because at the end of the day, you know, in the scriptures, it says when Jesus talks about, Paul, all of those who come before me were thieves and robbers.
Yes, that's right. Yes, he did.
You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, right, all of those who came before black people in this country, in this city, in this state, made big promises.
Yep.
But little to show for it.
Little to show for it.
And I understand. I totally understand.
And there's no reason why our schools, all this stuff should be happening on their watch.
Yeah.
There's no way.
You're right.
No way.
You're right.
So, like I said, they're in the world of trouble, Fraud.
I hear you. I definitely hear you.
Brother.
Yes, sir. Hey, Paul, always good to hear you from you. Thank you for checking in from West Baltimore. Let's go to our final caller, Fred, from East Baltimore. Man, we got Baltimore checking in all over the place. Fred, what's your take?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, my brother.
You're welcome.
First and foremost, change is not going to happen overnight.
No, it's not.
It's going to be
right,
a process.
You're right.
So starting off, we got to get the House. We got to win this election. Whether you want to be a Democrat and change next year to a Republican, so be it. Right now, we got to vote as Democrats. Because if not, Obamacare, as they say it, and it's really not Obamacare, but because President Obama is behind it, they named it Obama.
You're right. The Affordable Care Act.
It's health care for everybody.
Yep.
They're going to get rid of that if we don't vote. Education is going to suffer if we don't vote. Housing and all that stuff is going to suffer if we don't vote. That's one aspect. So we got to first start by winning the House, Senate, all of that. We got to get out there and vote. This gubernatorial race that's coming up, I think Van will be great because he wants effective change. See, let me end with this. See, all in Baltimore.
Fred, what happened? Did we lose your side? Hey, Fred, I'm going to give me a call right back. I want you to give us your final thought because we got a couple of moments left. Oh, man. 410-319-8888, Fred. I want to make sure you get your opportunity to share your final thought. Man, oh, man. Man, oh, man. Look, the fact is, there's a change coming, folks. Change is coming, and we got to be prepared for it. Fred, you want to lie?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
Fred, go ahead, brother.
Well, my point is this. See, Baltimore wants change.
Yeah.
So they say you got to pay for a better police officer, you got to pay more money. Better teacher, you got to pay more money. It don't matter if you pay more money if you ain't cleaning the house. You're just going to pay for a better police officer who's going to get trained by the same rotten egg that's already there. Mm-hmm. And until we effectively want effective change and look at the people who are actually putting these people on the street, teaching these new teachers what to do, we're going to still have the same product. You got teachers that are retiring because they're tired of the system. People who are qualified to do the job. You know what I mean? You got a guy like Mr. Roger Shaw. Why he ain't up in a higher position than what he is in is crazy to me. This guy, he's a mentor. He tutelage kids. I mean, but we work them to the point where we want them out of the system.
Right.
And so until Baltimore decides to have effective, meaningful change, we're going to have the same product on the street. People going to still complain about the stuff that they complain about because, one, they don't want discipline in their own lives. But they want somebody to come in the office and be disciplined for them.
Absolutely.
So it works all the way around.
Absolutely.
All the way around. And it's a process that's going to take some time, but we got to do our part. We got to vote, and we got to look inside and say, this is what I need to do to change, and I want effective change. I just don't want to put a Band-Aid on it. So until they really look ready to look inside and clean up house, because everybody pimping everybody. Everybody know everybody. Everybody helping the next friend get a job, and regardless of whether or not they qualified or not, because they got 4 years to ride, or we ain't getting nothing. We letting all the good people retire and leave the city.
There it is. Hey, Fred, you said it. Perfect way to end the conversation. Thank you so much for checking in and sharing that thought. And I like what Fred said. We have to decide to want change, folks. We have to decide to want change. Because what? If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. We have to decide to want change. Look, that's what this whole situation is about. That's where we are in this country. And democracy will be at risk. Democracy is already on the ballot. The character of this country is on the ballot. The sanity of this country is on the ballot. The truth about this country is on the ballot. So it's all happening. That's where we are. Look, folks, we got to go. I want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of the conversation. Tomorrow, make sure you check into WEAA as we will have Your Vote, Your Voice 2018, our election coverage that will be happening all day long. So stay tuned for that all day tomorrow on air and online at WEAA.org. I want to thank all of you. I want to thank my dynamic production team. It's Mallory Pinker-Pierre, Alex Blanc, my production assistants, Daryl and Jalen, and my engineer, Dre Day, for making me sound so good. Make sure you continue the conversation on social media and check out For the Culture 88.9, also for Raji Muhammad on all social media platforms. Stay tuned. Up next is In the Groove with LaDon Black, giving you that cool jazz for your evening. As always, folks, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to having another great conversation with you tomorrow here on For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Your vote, your voice, 2018, tomorrow here on WEAA. Peace.